The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and do not necessarily reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters, and rebroadcast on the University of Connecticut's WHUS, 91.7 FM, Storrs, and WHUS.org, UConn's Radio for the People. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, in advance of the Nuns on the Bus stopping in West Hartford this coming Sunday, a cell phone is passed among three of the sisters, including celebrity nun Simone Campbell, as the bus rolls through the Midwest on the fifth of Network's cross-country tours, this one titled Mend the Gaps, to bring attention to the various disparities among us. The bus stops in West Hartford, Connecticut on July 24th. Find the complete schedule at networklobby.org and nunsonthebus.org. I'll also post it at reasonablycatholic.com. Also this hour, continuing our nun theme, we'll hear from Commonweal film critic Richard Oliva on the movie The Innocents, about a convent of post-World War II nuns with a big problem. Finally, I can't resist announcing a special treat. On the next two episodes, on July 26th and August 2nd, we'll talk with WNPR's Arts and Politics and everything else raconteur Colin McEnroe about his decision, after a lifetime of seeking, to go to church. And of course, we'll talk about lots more. That's why it takes two episodes. Mark your calendars. Back in a moment with Nuns on the Bus.
Many dogs and cats spend endless days indoors staring at the wall, living for the moment when you will come home and tell them you love them, take them out, and make a fuss over them. Dogs and cats need physical exercise and mental stimulation, things to do and think about in order to be healthy and happy. Please set time aside for them and give them a real life and real love. For more information, please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals at 757-622-PETA. Or helpinganimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
On the road again, going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again.
On the road. Hello, Ashley Wilson.
Hello, from the road.
Yes, you're the communications director for Nuns on the Bus, correct?
Yes, I am.
And where are you right now?
We are on the road in Missouri, and I'm sitting here with Sister Simone and Sister Loretta and Sister Susan, and they're excited to talk to you today.
Well, why don't we pass the phone to Sister Simone and get on our way?
Great. Here's Sister Simone. Hi, this is Sister Simone.
Hi, Sister. You may not remember, but we met back the last time you were in Connecticut.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah, you gave a wonderful talk at a small church and then signed books afterward, and you let me bother you with a few questions.
I do remember it, actually.
Do you? Yeah, you know what? It's coming back to me, too, that you were about to meet with Paul Ryan.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot that. That was our second visit.
Okay.
And, it was a great opportunity. You know, we've been trying to meet with him since then, but we haven't been successful. We've met with his staff, but now that he's speaker, it's really hard to get a meeting.
Oh, interesting.
We did start our bus trip in Janesville, where he's from, because we wanted to lift up the town that he's from. But interesting, from that same county is one of the most progressive members of Congress, Congressman Mark Pocan. So we wanted to start our bus trip in the town that produces both Speaker Ryan and Congressman Pocan and say, this is a great place to mend the gaps.
Oh, wow. And that's the title of this tour.
Absolutely, yes. Mend the gaps, reweave the fabric of our society.
Okay. So the fact that these two differently minded men, politicians, are from the same, is it not town, but state, that
oh,
feels...
Oh, no, they're actually from the same county.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that feels...
Can you believe that? Isn't that amazing?
Who can understand? It's a mystery. Like the nuns used to say when I was in school, it's a mystery.
Amen, amen.
But, you know, that feels like a metaphor then for you, that we can both, we can all come from the same county in a kind of intellectual, spiritual way.
That's it, exactly. You get the metaphor, yeah, right away. Not everybody gets the metaphor, but it is.
So... May I diverge from our mission just momentarily to observe and maybe ask you to comment on the fact that although we thought the Vatican's inquisition into the sisters was done, you know where I'm going with this.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
A few representatives of certain orders have been called back for a chat, a friendly chat. Help me out.
Well,
is it that we don't know Pope Francis, that we think we know him and we really don't?
Well, it appears that some of the individual letters that Catholic Sisters communities got included, they say that there's 10 communities that got additional questions and invitations to come. Actually, only 3 of the communities have made it public that they were one of the communities, but I've heard that the total number is 10, and that they are going to Rome. They've been invited to Rome for specific dates, apparently, I heard.
God.
And that they're asked to have further dialogue and conversation. Now, none of us know what they have in mind. And I think based on history, we're all a little nervous about it.
Yeah.
But yet, on the other hand, we do trust that the message of Pope Francis about engaging with those who are at the margins of our society, doing the work that we've been doing for all these years, is at the heart of the mission of it. And so we're holding these communities in prayer and... trusting that the Spirit will make something good come out of more painful stuff.
Mm. Why does it always have to be 2 steps forward and 1 back? You know,
now, there is a good question. I would love to know that, especially politically. I mean, it's both the politics of Rome and the politics of our country. What a challenge.
And yet you keep putting yourself in there with both feet. In a way that just feels wildly optimistic and foolish, if I can say
well,
it that
way. Well, totally foolish, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, really, our life is about engaging the gospel. And what we see with Jesus in the gospel all the time is that Jesus walked towards trouble. He walked towards the people who were hurting. He walked towards those who... were suffering and at the margins of the society, to the blind and the lepers. But he also walked towards the Pharisees and Sadducees, the ones that criticized him, and engaged them in conversation. So, from my perspective, we're just living out our vocation. And vocations are strange. They're a little strange, I'll say that. Mine is. It's a mystery to me. But yet, on the other hand, it's all about trying to live the gospel in our time. So, we got to do what Jesus did, and that is walk towards those who are in need, walk towards those who disagree with us.
All right. This is your 5th bus trip, yes?
Yes, it is.
And how would you say it's changed or different from previous ones?
Well, that's a really good question. I think one of the things that's changed is we have a better idea of what we're doing, which makes it a lot easier to put one of these together.
Sure.
But yet, on the other hand, what we're seeing is more and more anguish in our nation, seeing people who are suffering and left out, seeing people who are young people who are losing their grants to go to college. We just heard in Illinois that 18,000 college students are not going to be able to return to college because of Illinois cut to funding higher ed. I mean, that to me was shocking, that 18,000 young people are having their hope dashed because of their state legislature's refusal to fix a broken system.
Yeah, and
again, we see people struggling. I think I thought after the bus trip, maybe we'd have a little more success. But at the same point, what I see is people coming together. Last night, we were in Bloomington, Illinois, and we're at a caucus, and the room was filled to capacity. We had people moving outside into other rooms to have their small group conversation because it was so crowded.
Wow.
And so the fact is that people want.
Are you there?
That's giving me hope in the midst of all this.
You know what? I think the bus went through a tunnel because you went a little blank there for a minute.
You know what? We're in the midst of a huge thunder and lightning storm.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I'm picking up, just because of what you just said about the huge turnout, that you're getting the same warm response as previously, that people, you've captured their imagination.
Oh, we really are getting the same quality of response, but I think what we've discovered is, we thought that Catholic Sisters were seen mostly by Catholics, but the amazing reality is that our bus trips appeal both to Catholics and non-Catholics and people of no faith. In Madison, Wisconsin, where we started, I had a woman come up to me and say, well, you know, I'm not Catholic. In fact, I'm an atheist. I love what you're doing. Thank you for doing it. And it's that kind of coming together that we get to experience, which for me is really sacred.
You're listening to a chat with three nuns on the bus in advance of their coming to Connecticut as part of their cross-country talking and listening tour, shining a light on the disparities among us. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM Middletown, providing community radio that matters.
Laughing on the bus, playing games with the faces. She said the man in the gabardine suit was a spy. I said be careful, his bow tie is really a camera.
Well, I'm going to invite you to pass the phone, sister. As much as you're a celebrity and I could talk to you all day and people will be interested in anything you say, I'm going to ask, I guess it's Sister Loretta we'll hear from next?
Yes, Sister Loretta. She's right here.
Okay.
I'll tell you, she's looking a little nervous.
Oh, she's gosh. Excited. Tell her she's among friends.
Hello, Maria.
Hi, sister.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for your travels.
Oh, no, thank you. I'm enjoying myself.
Oh, good. I asked Sister Simone about how this trip compares to previous ones. Have you ever been on a nun on the bus tour?
No, this is my first time.
Oh. And what are your impressions?
Time, but I hope it's not my last time.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
What are some details that you could tell us about it that will help people to really picture your life there on the road?
Well, first of all, the bus is very comfortable.
Good.
And I'm traveling with some really great people.
Excellent.
Meeting different sisters and the staff, and to be in the presence of Sister Simone. Everything's just been fantastic.
Yeah.
And the people that we've met along the way, the people we met in Madison, and gosh, I can't even remember where we've been.
I know that feeling when traveling.
And, yeah, we've just met some really great people and listening to their stories.
Yeah.
Personally, I was a little apprehensive about traveling because I can teach social justice, but I've never been a person to really get out there and act upon what I've been teaching.
Yeah.
But this has been a great experience for me.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Like I said, I would like to do this again.
Tell me, what would qualify as a successful trip?
Bus far, I think, has been successful in the fact that we've listened to people and people have listened to us, and we've been able to give them hope. And I think if we continue to do that, that will that would qualify as a successful trip.
I know.
It's been a sign of hope for people, hope for the hopeless and encouragement for those who've been discouraged. I found out last night just listening to people and being attentive to their needs. People are hungry for that.
Interesting.
People to listen and to help them understand what's happening in the government and the possibility of things that could be happening with the government.
So they're telling you their stories. Are you soliciting them? Are you saying, tell me what's going on in your life, or do they just volunteer it?
Basically, they're volunteering it when we're having our caucuses in the evenings. We have a rally earlier in the morning, and I noticed yesterday some of those same people come in the evening for the caucuses, and in those caucuses, we're talking about mending the gaps when we talk about tax justice, living wages, family-friendly workplaces, and access to democracy, health care, citizenship, and housing. And people are sitting in the different groups. They are invited to go to the different groups that they would like to discuss. Mm-hmm. And they're invited to share their stories with one another if they're comfortable doing so. Mm-hmm. And thus far, people have been comfortable just sharing their stories.
Because there's so much about racial strife in the news, does that come up?
It has not come up in the groups that I've been in.
Okay.
I am African American, but that has not come up.
Good to know.
In the groups that I've been in.
Yeah,
it might possibly come up tomorrow when we're in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
But thus far, the African American population has been probably about 1%.
Okay. Well, what do you do for fun on the bus, sister?
I would say fun is just listening and talking to the other sisters.
Yeah.
We've all, I don't think any of us knew one another before. At least I didn't. So we talk about our ministries. We talk about our first time, second time, or third time on the bus.
Yeah.
And just about the people that we've met and how some of us have already experienced, personally, for me, a transformation just by hearing the people tell their stories and how that's impacted us personally.
How would you describe the transformation that you're undergoing?
I would say for myself, just to, I work in a parish that is probably upper middle class, if not the upper class.
Right.
We do get food or bring in food, take food, clothing to the crisis social services or to Catholic charities. But I don't think people that are at my parish, which is predominantly white, really know what it's like to live on the poverty level.
Yeah.
I don't think they really know what it's like not to have health care.
Yeah.
They don't know what it's like to not live with affordable housing. So this has been just an eye-opener for me in that way.
You'll be bringing back a full report, I imagine.
Well, I think it would be possible for me to do that with the priests that I work with and the staff. But I'm not sure how easy that will be to present it to the majority of the parishioners.
Oh, you can't get up after Mass and give a little talk?
Well, possibly do that.
Yeah.
My expertise is pastoral care, so I'm really not there to influence them in any other way.
Okay.
But there would be people that I could talk to. I think I'm on one end of the spectrum, and possibly they're on the other end.
Politically.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for sharing today and ask you if you wouldn't pass the phone to your sister.
I will, and thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hello, Maria. This is Sister Susan.
Hi, sister. Thank you so much.
Sure.
You know, I've been kind of parceling out my questions, and the last one for you is about politics. I see from the nunsonthebus.org website that there's a lovely comparative analysis of Hillary Clinton's positions on various subjects juxtaposed against Donald Trump's. And reading these side by side, I don't think there can be any question but that the sisters hope that the Democrats win in November.
Well, you know, that's what we're about. And, you know, we have some side-by-sides for the presidential candidates. We also have them for the Senate races in each of the states that we're going to.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we just actually had we entered Missouri a little bit ago. And every time we go into one of the states, the staff from Network go over those side-by-sides with us. And I thought it was really interesting for the Missouri side-by-side that, you know, in some of the issues, the candidate from one party was in line with us, and on some of the other issues, the candidate from the other party also had that. So we're really about bridging those gaps to mend those fences that we've put up between ourselves when we're all really Americans. And, you know, as Catholics, we have Catholics of all political stripes, and some people might vote Republican one time and Democratic another.
Yeah.
But the question for us really is, how is that impacting the people that are most in need in our society? I think Catholic sisters in general, the ones that I know, are very excited that Pope Francis is raising the call to focus on the issues. You know, he talks about overcoming indifference, that's really the major moral call of our day. And for so long, I think we focused on one issue or the other, and he's calling us to look at all of the issues in terms of how they are impacting people, whether that's our brothers and sisters here in the U.S. or, you know, overseas in other countries. We're all so connected. His two most recent documents have joy in the title, Joy of the Gospel and the Joy of the Family, Joy of Love,
right,
which is his letter on the year of the family. And it really is a joyful way to live out the call,
yeah,
to follow Jesus. And to have the Pope leading the way, I think, is pretty exciting.
It is. You're right. And I imagine that on the bus there's quite a bit of joy.
There is a lot of joy on the bus. We laugh a lot. We really do. You know, it's funny. I was in Chicago visiting my sister before I came on the bus, and my nephew is 6 years old. And when he heard I was going on something called the Nuns on the Bus, he just started singing the Nuns on the Bus Go Round and Round. And he thought it was going to be so much fun, and I go back and tell him that it is. You know, I haven't sung that song yet, but it's pretty fun.
That's great.
So wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round, round and round. The wheels on the bus go round and round, all through the town.
You're listening to a chat with three nuns on the bus, who by the time this airs will be in the final stretch of their fifth cross-country tour focused on social justice. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM Middletown, providing community radio that matters.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, "What if?" Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, "Listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man."
To the politics of things.
Yeah.
Is there, I don't know how it works with your particular order or orders,
mm-hmm,
but isn't there a kind of fine line where if you're not careful about seeming to endorse a particular candidate or party, you could risk your nonprofit status?
Yeah, I'm not really an expert in that, but I do know, you know, as citizens, we all have the right to believe what we believe and to vote for who we want to vote for and to say what we think. Our congregations are nonprofit organizations. They have to follow whatever those laws are. But I think, you know, from my perspective, really focusing on the issues,
yeah,
and what matters to people, from the little I know about those laws,
yeah,
we're in good territory and good history of all sorts of churches and groups.
Okay.
Focusing on that.
Well, in that case, I'll dare to ask whether you have any any thoughts about the general tenor of the discourse, whether it's troubling.
I definitely do have a lot of thoughts about the general tenor. You know, my mother, who passed away about 13 years ago, I think would be horrified at what's going on in our society these days, particularly in the political climate. There really seems to be, on all sides, some incivility, I think would be a polite way to put it.
Yeah.
And so to be part of the Nuns on the Bus, who really, in light of what Pope Francis called us to, are looking to go to those divided places, to have those conversations with people that might think things differently than we do, and to really engage in those conversations, and to model how we could do this in dialogue,
right,
in love for each other and for our country. Because there's not a lot of that happening when I watch the news.
And right.
That's what's been so great. And I heard Loretta talking a little bit about the caucus that we had last night, which was our first one. And, you know, we were talking about some pretty serious issues, and
yeah,
there's a lot of pain that people have and a lot of perhaps disagreement about the ways to go about things. But there was such creative energy and respect that it gave me so much hope that we
great.
Could figure this out.
That's so great to hear. I think if Donald Trump had gone to Catholic school, he would be a totally different person.
You know, who knows? It might depend on who we encountered in that school and how that was going. But one of our sisters actually taught Glenn Beck. So you never know what education you have and what impact it has on you.
So much for that theory.
She's a little second grade boy. And, you know, she doesn't really always agree with him on a lot of things. And sometimes she does.
Oh, that is something.
Never know.
Wow. Oh, you know what? Tell that sister that I would love to talk to her sometime on the show. That would be wonderful. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
See, so
everybody
much.
Everybody had some teachers.
Yep.
You know, everyone knows everyone.
And you know, the teachers are not to blame necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who knows how we turn out? And I think the best we can do is to, as I said, face what's before us for that day and see how we can build a better world for ourselves and our families.
It's a beautiful thing. It really is. I'm so grateful that you're all taking the time to do this, and I'm going to send you a check. I don't make a lot of money. I don't have a lot of money, but I just feel like this is the kind of dialogue, this kind of discourse that we really need more of. It's a beautiful thing.
Certainly very generous of you, and be sure that it will be used for good things.
Great. Well, we look forward to your arriving in Connecticut. Have you ever been to Connecticut?
I have. I live not too far away, actually. I'm in New Jersey.
Okay.
So I'm not myself on the second leg of the trip, but I think I probably will make my way to one of those visits to join the other sisters that are on the second leg of the bus.
Oh, when do you call it a day?
This group of sisters on the bus right now are, I think most of us are on the road until we reach Cleveland.
Okay.
And have our conversations at the Republican Convention.
Oh, that's going to be interesting.
Some are staying on longer, and then some others are joining them to go through the rest of the trip, ending up in Philadelphia.
All
I'm actually very excited that even though I'm not on the second leg of the trip, when the sisters come through New Jersey, they're going to be staying at my mother's house, so that'll be fun to be the hostess to them.
Oh, that's great. That's so good. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say before I let you get back to your bus trip?
Our preparation.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think that's all I have to say. And I think we're good. Yeah, thank you so much. We look forward
to seeing
the story and coming to Connecticut.
Excellent. Maybe you'll pass me back to Ashley.
I will give you back to Ashley. Here
Thank you.
Hi, Maria.
Hi. Hey, listen, if Paul Ryan climbs aboard the bus, you got to make sure I know about it.
I promise we will tell you. So we are not holding our breath.
No, I know. Wow. Well, that was just a lot of fun and really interesting and hope-giving. Really.
I'm so glad to hear it. Yeah, it's always an inspiration traveling around with these nuns on the bus.
I can imagine, really. And I wish you safe travels and many happy returns. I'll see you in Connecticut.
Thank you. I look forward to meeting you in Connecticut.
That was a visit with three of the nuns on the bus. Up next, more nuns as Common Wheel magazine film critic Richard Oliva unpacks the film The Innocents. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters.
Me, a cat, moving in with a single guy. At first, I thought it might be a little weird, but turns out it's actually pretty amusing. For instance, like my human's gotten so used to me being around, sometimes I think he forgets I'm here. He'll get up for work, shower, shave, and come out with no pants. Plops right down in front of the TV. Hello, there's a lady in the room.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Welcome back, Richard Oliva.
Thank you very much. But we don't have a very happy movie to talk about.
Oh, my gosh. Do you know, when I read the little blurb about what this movie was about,
yes,
I wished that I was going to see Finding Dory.
Yes, I know how you feel.
Oh.
I steeled myself when you called my attention to the movie, The Innocents. I felt that that had to be reviewed for Common Wheel.
Yeah.
Because it's... features, well, in its story, a terrible, terrible incident, which apparently did take place at the end of World War II, and concerns the attack on a convent of nuns, perhaps Benedictine nuns, I'm not sure, by Russian soldiers who had been victorious in pushing back the Germans and claimed as their reward sex, brutal sex, forced sex, rape with the women of Germany, some of the women of Poland, and had attacked a convent of nuns and raped most of them within the convent. This is not shown in the movie. We better make it clear. And the movie is called The Innocents. The original Polish title is Agnus Dei, Lamb of God, which to me is even more vivid and accurate a title than The Innocents, even though it means approximately the same thing, the idea of innocence being sacrificed. The plot, though, concerns what happens after this brutal mass rape. A worker, a French Red Cross medic, I don't think she's a fully fledged doctor, but a volunteer medic with the Red Cross has moved into Poland to treat the survivors of the concentration camps. And as we know, most of the concentration camps were in Poland. She's supposed to be, she's under orders by the Red Cross, strict orders to treat the concentration camp survivors and nobody else. If Polish women or Polish men need treatment, then they have to go to a Polish doctor. And she is beseeched by a nun to come to the convent and treat the raped women, who some of whom are now pregnant and about to give birth. Well, she doesn't even hear the story out. She just says, if you need a doctor, please go to a Polish doctor. Then she sees this very young nun out in the snow praying, and her heart melts, and she goes with her to the convent and learns the problem that these raped women, some of them anyway, are about to give birth and need help in doing so.
When I first read about this movie, I read it quickly, and I thought it said pregnant nun, not plural.
Right, right.
And I thought, oh, that old trope, you know, of the the nun who had an affair, and now
it's an old trope mostly because of 18th century French novels by people like Diderot, who wrote soft pornography about nuns in the convent. And they did so in order to take an anti-clerical position and arouse people's prejudices against women concealed behind high walls.
Right.
And it is rather effective, but it created this whole genre of literature. One of them is called The Nun, by Diderot. He wrote some of them. And others, you know, men of reason in the 18th century who were making war on prejudice and superstition, and therefore used prejudice and superstition to arouse the masses against nuns who they thought were having affairs with priests behind high walls, or maybe having lesbian affairs. That was all part of the literature. And it may be, you know, come to think of it, that when our medic gets to the Polish convent, the medic's name is Mathilde. When she hears the Mother Superior's explanation that she doesn't want any body who speaks Polish or Russian to learn of the upcoming births, it's because she doesn't want to have the surrounding Polish population up in arms against the sisters. The more superstitious and the prurient would come to believe, oh, they've been having affairs with Russian soldiers. And in one case, this turns out to be true, that one of the nuns did have, a reluctant nun, a nun who never wanted to be a nun, did have an affair with a Russian soldier and became pregnant. But the rest of them were abused, raped women. But the Mother Superior may be afraid that the surrounding population will attack the convent and drive the women out. The other thing that occurred, now this is what's strange about the movie for me, and other people may not have this problem. I don't think my wife had any problem with it. When the Mother Superior gives this explanation that she doesn't want the news to come out because she says, and I quote, they will condemn us and expel us from the convent. I wondered, who is they? There could be several theys. It could be the Catholic hierarchy in Poland. It could be the Vatican would expel women for being raped. No enlightened theologians in the Vatican? None whatsoever? Now, I'm not being naive about this. I know that the Catholic hierarchy everywhere has been often indifferent and oblivious to the concerns of Catholic women, and especially nuns. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying, really? They would have no recourse to a more understanding approach whatsoever? Is that what she means? Well, there's no explanation given. Another perhaps she's afraid that the Soviet authorities, who are beginning to take hold of Poland at the end of 1945, they won't consolidate their power till a couple of years later, but they're beginning to take power. They will use superstition to turn the Polish populace against the Catholic Church in general and embrace Marxism and complete materialism. All these are perhapses, and these perhapses existed in my mind throughout the first half hour of the movie, and none of these perhapses are answered until the last 20 minutes of the movie, when we see what the Mother Superior's plans really are. And her, I don't want to give away too much, we're treading around spoilers here. We see that the Mother Superior's mind has been so warped, perhaps by the rape, perhaps because of her own prejudices, perhaps because of her own rather warped conceptions of what nuns should be, of what chastity should mean to a nun, that she has taken a rather drastic course. And this course of action is revealed in the last 20 minutes of the movie, and she is fought by her own, up to now obedient, assistant. I don't know what to call her, the assistant, Mother Superior, Sister Maria. And the conflict between the two women, I believe, gives rise to the real theme of the movie. Is the church an institution whose reputation is to be protected against all possibilities of rumor? Is the reputation to be preserved above all things? Or is a division of the Catholic Church, a convent, really an agent of the Church of Love? And that no division of the church, no order of sisters should be afraid of changing, completely changing their way of being and working in the world in order to accommodate the real mission of the church, which is to succor the needy, to love the body of Christ. So that I take to be the real theme of the movie. And my only trouble with the movie is this theme really doesn't emerge till very, very late in the movie. And the medic, Mathilde, although well played and a sympathetic character, I don't think belongs at the center of the movie. My wife has called this the Nick Carraway problem in The Great Gatsby. Nick Carraway narrates The Great Gatsby. And by the time the end of the novel comes, I think we know more about Nick Carraway than the mysterious Gatsby. Nevertheless, we get a clear elucidation of the theme of The Great Gatsby through the eyes of Nick Carraway. I don't think the medic, Mathilde, really serves that purpose. I don't think she elucidates the theme of the movie very, very well. And the movie sticks too close to her. Whereas the real protagonist and antagonist of this movie are the Mother Superior and her assistant, Sister Maria, who come into real strong conflict towards the end of the movie and really clarify what the theme of the movie is, which I've just stated.
Okay. A couple of thoughts.
Yes.
First of all, and this is why you're the film critic and I'm not, it never occurred to me to wonder about who they are. I took the Mother Superior's worries to be part and parcel of her living in a closed system, and they are everyone outside it.
Okay.
So that may be a kind of simplistic approach to it. But
No, fair enough. I mean, that would be everybody, the hierarchy and
right.
The population at large.
Yeah.
But as far as turning them out of the convent, I think you have to be a little more specific. Is this a charge against the male hierarchy of Poland or perhaps the Vatican and an instance of their habitual male indifference to the female population of the Catholic Church, especially those in service, like nuns?
Okay.
You know, but I see what you mean, Maria. Yeah. I mean, there could have so many people against them. This could be just general fear on
right.
her, and it's not even paranoia. It's a
right.
very real fear that she's facing. Right. Of course, were you surprised then to find in the closing moments of the movie that her mind, the Mother Superior's mind, was so corroded to take the action that she did take and which we won't reveal?
Was I surprised?
Yeah.
Because there is a reason that comes out along the way toward the end, I guess I attributed her actions to that.
Mm-hmm. To her kind of PTSD.
To say the least.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, after all they've been through. That's a fair enough supposition.
Well, no, it's not what they've been through. It's the particular way what they've been through afflicts her.
Uh-huh.
She's not pregnant, but she has her own...
Yes. She has her own suffering.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I attributed the actions that she takes to that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I don't think she's so far gone that she would go insane. I attribute her actions to her character, which existed even before the rape.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you're talking about, and we'll let the audience, right, when they go to this movie, discover what we're talking about, because there is a kind of surprise ending,
yes,
to this movie. And it doesn't much involve Mathilde, the medic,
yeah,
although she does come up with the last solution, which leads to a happy ending. And I have to quarrel a little bit with this happy ending. It's not unbelievable. It's done in a rather cute Sound of Music way with beaming nuns and happy children, which I found a little bit out of key with the somberness of the rest of the movie. I think it needed a bit of a transition before we get to all these happy faces at the end.
Have we told too much there?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
There are surprises in store.
It is helpful to know that the unrelenting difficulties,
yes,
and terror and pain do resolve, yeah, themselves. Yeah.
This movie takes its place in a kind of tradition of movies about the Catholic Church, mostly made in France by people like Robert Bresson and other filmmakers as well, often taken from the novels of Georges Bernanos. Movies like The Diary of a Country Priest,
right,
and Mouchette, and In the Sign of Saturn. Under the Sign of Satan, I'm sorry, Under the Sign of Satan, also by Bernanos. There's a tradition of a kind of very ascetic, clean, somber, low-energy level movie making by French movie makers,
yeah,
like Bresson, that treat the church with great sympathy, but also portray it as a very kind of ascetic, joyless life. Now, the style of this movie, which deals with not the daily life of a priest or a nun, but with a catastrophe and a horrible, horrible incident. The style of this movie is in line with those kinds of movies. It's very ascetic, somber, beautiful,
yes,
in a quiet, low-level way. The lighting,
right,
is very, well, I said that they took the lighting from that great Dutch painter,
Vermeer,
yes.
You know, any painting of his that involves a woman in a veil near a window, you can see in this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
they
beautiful.
Go to Vermeer for a model. Yes.
Yeah.
It's almost kind of a reflex nowadays. A lot of movie makers are looking to Vermeer for a visual model. They want that kind of somber beauty that he gets into his work. Yeah.
I want to get back to Mathilde.
Yeah.
Because, again, I disagree with you,
okay,
about that,
yeah,
choice of actress and the way the way her stubborn streak and her kind of taciturnity, shall we call it, the way that helps or doesn't help the film's progress. I found her personality to be just right, that there was a kind of mystery about her, and you understood that she was keeping the nuns secret, but you also sensed that there was something else that was just deep and unattainable by her Jewish lover, and that appealed to me.
You know, I'm with the Jewish lover. I'm thinking, what the heck is going on inside of you? I don't mind a mysterious woman being presented on the screen, but I think finally we have to get a little bit closer to the core of what makes her mysterious. They give her a background in the movie, but it's all just words to me. She's supposed to be working class with Marxist parents, and then later she tells us she's not a card-carrying member. Well, that's fine. Does she still have communist sympathies? Does she still have socialist sympathies? Has she reacted against her parents? The politics wouldn't tell us everything about her, but if she has a materialistic outlook on life, then she has to stretch her sympathies to come into spiritual communion with the sisters in the convent she's obviously alive to their suffering.
Yes.
She's obviously a compassionate person.
Yeah.
Does her compassion overcome her sense of strangeness when she gets into the convent, or does she not feel the strangeness to her of the convent. She seems to adjust herself much too easily for real drama to take place in the course of the movie. And just to give you an illustration, when that Jewish doctor finally is brought into the convent to help with the births, he immediately feels, these are aliens, and look, I'm offering you my services, but if you're going to be queasy about me, a doctor, a man, a Jew treating you, I'll leave right now. Now, what's it going to be? And that moment of collision is so much more dramatic than anything that happens between Mathilde and the sisters. Now, I may be being unfair because I like hyper drama. And I think somebody more adjusting themselves to the quiet, low-level drama of Mathilde's quiet, low blood sugar level personality will not have any trouble. And you didn't have any trouble.
I didn't. But then again, I'm a fan of those kinds of movies where not much happens.
Yeah.
My Dinner with Andre kind of movie. But
yeah, I see what you
mean.
You
know what I mean? And so, all right, just thinking out loud now, there is a moment when Mathilde is observing the sisters as they're chanting, and she seems to have a look on her face of almost appreciation, you know? And so I'm wondering if there isn't a kind of kindred spirit going on there.
Yeah, I wondered that too. I wondered that too.
And you're right. She doesn't pursue the strangeness. It's not really brought to the forefront at all that these nuns, this is crazy how they live, you know? But I think it's because Mathilde has this kind of depth to her where she really doesn't feel so alien there. I don't know.
I wonder what her future spiritual life then is. Yeah. I don't expect the movie to answer that question, but I wondered if by the time we get to the end of the movie and we see her back in France, again, serving the ill, either as a medic or perhaps she's gone on to become a full-fledged doctor. Perhaps she has acquired more of a spiritual life, or she's content with her materialistic outlook, but still full of compassion for the poor, as the most materialistic of people can be. Yeah. They don't lack their own kind of compassion, and perhaps we couldn't even see their own kind of spirituality. But I just wondered a little bit too much about her. After a while, she became too generalized a character. I didn't see her goals. Yeah. I didn't really get a taste, enough of a taste of her inner life. But you did. Whereas the assistant to the Mother Superior, really, as the movie goes on, we learn that she is a very
complicated,
worldly, highly intelligent, highly flexible woman, full of compassion, not at all spiritually arthritic, as I think the Mother Superior is. We learn a lot more about her goals without ever learning about her background. She says she was not a virgin before she became a nun. Well, we never learn about her love affair in the past. We don't have to.
Right.
We understand her fully without her background being filled in. And let me test my Polish pronunciation by saying that she's superbly played by a Polish actress called Agata Bizek. And the Mother Superior is also superbly played by another Agata, Agata Kulesza. Yeah. And please, Polish listeners, forgive me for my pronunciation.
You know, you end your review by saying that the film does what good films should do, which is that it lingers.
Yes, it stays with us.
And that is so absolutely true.
Yeah.
And I feel like I may have to see this movie again.
So will I.
Yeah.
And I might form a slightly different opinion about it, too.
Maybe we'll talk again.
Okay.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
That was a chat with Commonweal film critic Richard Oliva talking about the film The Innocents. Before that, we heard from three nuns on the bus. They're coming to West Hartford, Connecticut on July 24th. Find their full schedule at networklobby.org, nunsonthebus.org, and, of course, reasonablycatholic.com. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith. Be sure to tune in next time when our special guest will be WNPR's Colin McEnroe, explaining how he found his spiritual home. I'm Maria Johnson. Thanks for listening. Now stay tuned for The Jive at 5 and Acoustic Blender with Bill Revel.